let's welcome everyone here who's here, members of the committee. Good morning. Thank you for your attendance this morning. And let's welcome also a delegation from the DCI. We really appreciate your response to our request, requesting to you to brief us on various issues related to the work that you're doing. The areas they are absent to you, more especially on trade issues. We know that you have various institutions that you cooperating and collaborating with. And from the look of the briefing document, the slide represents that, I think. And we're hoping that within the 2.5 hours that we have, we'll be able to have both the briefing and the question and the answer of time. Thank you so much for agreeing to meet with us and to brief us. Otherwise, the members are ready to listen to the information that you've been entitled to us. And hopefully, through our engagement, we'll be able then to make each other richer than we were when we came here. So, without the waste of time, I'll just request the Secretary, Mr. Paul, to give us apologies, and then we will then get to introduction and from there to the presentation.
Thank you, Chairperson, and good morning, all. For the record, Chair, we only have two standing apologies from committee members, that being Mr. M.S. Mbata, MP from the FF, and Dr. M.J. Cardo. Standing apology for the rest of the year from the Democratic Alliance.
Thank you very much, Mr. Paul. Just in interest of our visitors, you would want to know who you're communicating, who you're talking to. This is important in our tradition and also as a humane and neighborly, just to satisfy those aspects, to introduce each other before we talk to each other. I'll start with the member there at the end, Member Atkinson, followed by Mfulo. And then followed by the whip of the committee, Mugede, and then followed by Mayor Masimbi, okay. And then Obahu, beginning January. And then lastly, Obahu Tiani. We also have our support staff. We have the aide to Mayor Mafudu, who is also the doctor. And then we have my PA, Venetia William, our researcher, Mabisa Mbelekan, and the secretary, Mr. Paul Mbele. Okay. And then the rest will introduce themselves. I think we know who we are. My name is Matilda Rukoma, the chair of the committee.
Good morning, Chairperson and committee members. My name is Rian Leroux. I'm the Acting Deputy Director General for Trade and Investment South Africa. I'm with my colleague, Lerato Matabohe, who is the head of Trade Invest Africa. What we'd like to share with you this morning is how.
Can we have all other members? Who are they? Mm-hmm. We need to know who's in our midst today.
Morning, Chair. Ace Garner from Trade and Industry.
I would just like the Baker and Belton's. We have approximately 2.5 hours as it stands now. I can do this presentation in about 1 hour and 20 minutes to 1 hour and 30 minutes. We have prepared quite a copious presentation because I thought that it would be only correct that we share, because it's a voluminous piece of work. I will then, of course, like to beg your indulgence that I won't go through every slide in detail, that would defeat the objective of us providing you with a proper briefing. So if we could work on that basis, if you want to make it shorter, you're most welcome. I will adapt my speaking through the slides then. So I would like to go with an hour and a half for the presentation with the carrier.
I think we will appreciate if you can condense it to 1 hour.
1 hour.
Yes.
Thank you, Chairperson, for making notice. The work of trade and investment in the Department of Trade and Industry is done with three strategic pillars. The pillar that I will...
Can you press your mic?
Oh, sorry, I didn't see. The work of trade and investment in the Department of Trade and Industry rests on three distinct pillars. There is all the work that deals with exports outside Africa, which I represent. My colleague here is the acting head of trade in West Africa. And then there is an apology from my colleague, who is Yunus Hussain, who is currently on an Operation Pakisab project in India, who does all the investment work for Investment South Africa. I will attempt to brief you in five parts. The first part of the presentation deals with an overview of the global trade situation. The second part will then deal with the trade as far as export promotion and development outside Africa. Thirdly, we will deal then with the work in Africa. And fourthly, we will deal with the investment work. And with your permission, Chair, we would also like to show you a very short video of what the investment shops look like, because last weekend we have now launched the third one with a fourth one which is in the pipeline. I hope that meets with your approval. I'm going to, as I said, not go through every slide to also pay respect to the Chair's wish. I think what is critical is that exports globally are growing. We need to take note of that. What is important is that services is becoming ever more important. If you look at the last bullet there, the issue of services exports, travel, transport, repair services, maintenance, computer and information services. We do need, in terms of current developments in government policy, also take note of the fourth industrial revolution, which in the next 20 to 30 years is going to have a massive impact on a country like us because of the digital world that we're entering. If one look at the South Africa's trade of goods, I regret to inform the committee that we have dropped below the 0.5% of total trade that we have. An important issue here is that one of the things we attempt in doing this work is the issue of policy coherency. And if you look at NDP targets for 2030, it is important that 0.47% have to double within the next 12 years. So the task at hand, if we are not going to buckle down and do it in a very pragmatic and effective way, we will be very hard-pressed to reach that magical 1% of global trade by 2030 as predicted by the NDP. I think what is important is that at constant levels, there was an additional export of 126 billion rand at constant prices. So exports are fairly stable at the moment. There is still contraction in some of the major traditional markets that we have, notably the US and the EU. our trade balance remains in the negative, but it did improve to $2.1 billion. Now, this is the magical bullet about exports, is that it's one of the things that help us to create a positive balance of payments. I think what is important, if we look at BRICS, which is an important configuration of countries that we deal with, we need to note that our exports to China has grown substantially, if you look at the graph up there. But what worries us about that trade is that, unfortunately, much of that is still not manufactured goods. And one of the key elements of our strategy for China going forward would need to be to substantially make sure that the basket of goods that we export to China, not just as China, but also as a member of BRICS, and then also India as an important component, we need to make sure that more manufactured goods are exported. Mining is the largest exporting sector, as you can see, but regrettably at the wrong end of the scale. I think what is important, how this contributes, is to increase the quality and quantum of foreign and domestic direct investment. That is the lifeblood of any modern economy, is to develop new and existing South African exporters' capabilities. A country of South Africa's normal bandwidth that we fit in have above 8,000 exporters. And I will speak at length later about specific attempts that we're making to fix that problem, is to ensure that we go beyond what we believe is no less than 2,000 regular exporters in South Africa. That is also one of our major problems with getting the manufactured exports going. So there's specific programs that we're launching and been implementing over the last 2 years to ensure that we have more exporters that are capable of doing this important work. We also manage the department's foreign office network, and I will show you a map which shows the global footprint, and we are currently revising that to ensure that with the current constraint on the fiscus, that footprint fits with the strategies that the department. We also deal with key organizations such as the Council of Trade and Industry Institutions, which are the 22 institutions that reports to the DTI, provincial governments, urban metropolitan councils, chambers of commerce, the private sector, etc. Jay, this is one of the crux slides in the presentation, and it represents the key work streams that deals with the subject on which we are attempting to brief you today. The first part is the export development and promotion and marketing part of it, which is managed by the division that I work for. The second part is Africa work. Successful nations trade with their neighbors. This is such an elementary thing that one can scarcely believe that we have not grasped that. And therefore a specific division was created to ensure that our work on the continent represents best practice, that we engage deeply, that we look at value chains, and I will also attempt to show you some of the new initiatives that my colleague had designed to ensure that we address the specific needs of Africa. And lastly, investment promotion and facilitation, which is the work of my colleague Yunus Hussein. And that is to provide the lifeblood of new inflowing capital services and transfer of technology. I will deal then as the second part, first of all, with the export development, promotion and marketing side of business. I think what is important is you cannot expect to send people out into the wild world who does not know how to export because we damage our companies. There's a fallacy to think that exports is a get-rich-quick scheme. Unfortunately, there is harsh evidence that we have often not provided the services to a particular segment of our emerging economy to help people to penetrate foreign markets. In terms of the current offerings that we are delivering, this is the actual instruments that we help, and we share these instruments. I think it's just an important thing to mention that it is not specific to the division that I work in, but between the triplets, as we are called, we share this resource, and each of the divisions then adapt these particular instruments to suit the particular needs of the markets and the clients. The major instruments in group offerings is national pavilions, outward selling trade missions, outward investments, inward buying missions, and inward investments. Then at an individual offering, we offer primary export market research, foreign direct investment research, individual inward bound missions, and I will speak at length to some of these instruments, but just as a sense of what is the offerings that we offer to the export community. The basis of all these instruments is delivered in four pillars through what is called the Integrated National Export Strategy that had been brought to Parliament 2 years ago through our committee and is now the national implementing instrument on how we as a country tackle the problems of export development. The first pillar is an enabling environment, and Chair, we often talk about things that we throw around like radical economic transformation, and we don't often define what it is that we mean by that term. What we would like to bring to this committee's attention is that these four pillars we hope to present as four individual work tracks that if we do our work substantially different with more finely shaped tools and instruments, more adapted to particular conditions, is that each of these pillars can actually present a radical departure from the classic way in which we have done the business. We need to also understand that our export community is very, very conventional. I will continue to trade with that particular country because my dad did. And we will also not just have to break our own shackles in terms of radically departing from a conventional way of doing business, but we will also have to inform our export community that these four pillars is how we can take hands to really radically transform the export scene as we've seen it. I will not preach today about the challenges that face us. We are all aware of that, but if we're not going to radically depart, I don't think that we're going to get to 1% by 2030. So there's a big burden on us not only to transform ourselves in terms of how we do our business, but also to ensure that this transformation sinks into the export community. The enabling environment I'm talking about is, first of all, how do you create an environment that all South Africans that are in the export trade deal with each other in one concerted team effort? At the moment, there's two problems with exports in South Africa. The first is a proliferation of services. In other words, there's too many services or there's too little services. We need to bring all the partners in this particular field together in one single. One way of doing that is to establish a National Export Advisory Council, a best practice. Example is in the Philippines, that have doubled their exports in 20 years since 1970 by employing an overseeing mechanism that looks at the cross-cutting problems that face a particular sector of the industry. It will be chaired by the Minister of Trade and Industry, and it will meet quarterly with the export community. The next is, how do we deal with the issue of Africa being a very positive development as far as I'm concerned about new ways of working? How do we all throw our energy into a particular new initiative that speaks to the very being of us, part of Africa? We have 22 export councils, but are we using them wisely? Are we all pulling in the same direction? Are we clustering their efforts? Secondly, is the issue of market prioritization and diversification and access. We can't carry on thinking that old agreements will hold water. We will have to really look at a process of how do you prioritize very specific emerging markets, how do you develop a specific strategy, and how do you gain access for your exporters. These needs to be market driven opportunities, because often we feel that if we export 10% more into a market, we're very satisfied. But the problem is, it's probably just one big exporter who have increased their sales. But have we not missed the other 20 opportunities in that market? Thirdly is the issue of export development, and we have the National Export Development Program, which I will also devote some time to. And that is about growing the exporter base. South Africa has a very low export culture. When things go good in the country, everybody stay home. If it gets bad, we run outside. There needs to be a very concerted effort to make sure that the country develops an export culture. That exports is part of my normal business. It can no longer be something that saves me when the local economy is becoming constrained. Successful nations in the export field have proven that countries that have a high export culture also has a high propensity to grow exports very specifically. The next piece then, to ensure that we have strategic export promotion. Strategic export promotion means that we cannot afford business as usual anymore. We can't, if the president spearheads a visit to a particular country, just fill a plane with diverse business people. There needs to be a plan behind this to strengthen the head of the country's foray into that country. The French are masters at this. We simply need to take that model and make it ours. To ensure that the work that the executive do in spearheading efforts into new markets is then profitably supported. We can no longer do general trade shows. We need to be honest. I'm not talking outside Africa specifically. We have to have a very specific focus on what exhibitions are we going to participate in. These are very high return on investment instruments. But we need to be slightly more clever. We need to understand that there are new kids on the block that are defining how to do this work. I'm talking about Vietnam, Philippines, Indonesia. That is the people that we need to watch. Because if we are not going to be that one step ahead of them, they will be a step ahead of us, and we might not be able to catch up with them. Chair, some of these are very busy slides, but I do think it's important because this is all the services that we offer to, and I'm not going to go into detail, but the committee may wish to interrogate that perhaps on their own and also keep as a record of the actual service delivery. In terms of the export development program, there's five key issues. Export culture, therefore export awareness seminars. You will not believe me, because I deal with this daily, how many companies don't know that they can actually export. The second part is information and advice. We now have an export help desk, which is based in Pretoria, and we're rolling that out to all the provincial agencies. The problem in South Africa, let's take, for instance, Polokwane, is about 350 kilometers from Pretoria. You can't expect a small business to drive to Pretoria to collect something very simple. So we need to decentralize these services. We need to supply companies with trade leads. The next is the capacity building, and we've got the Global Exporter Passport Program, which we will also talk about. The next is a future view of how we want to do our business better. The principle of export villages. We all know parts of the country where there are a lot of small businesses doing the same thing. But individually, they can't export because their individual exports are too small. The next is trade hubs. How do we assemble goods of the same nature? If there are 10 companies doing this, one of them won't penetrate the market, but 10 of them together, branding their products, could actually do so. The next is the leadership we need to provide. In this place where we now, government needs to step up to the plate and start providing very correct and very strategic advice to export councils, industry associations, joint action groups. We need to hold hands with other government departments, and you are just one floor ahead above us in our campus in Pretoria, so that relationship already I can tell you exist in a very close manner. We need to talk to service providers, that is the export agents, the travel, the logistics, and then we need to tie up our work with international organizations. A lot of countries offer us specific opportunities to enter markets through organizations that they operate in their own country. Very briefly, normally the export passport program is a process in which we're making small companies ready for the challenges abroad. It starts always with companies that are interested. I'm very pleased to tell you that in the last year we have done 181 companies that have progressed through the arrow that is on the board. So it starts with an indication that people are interested. The next part is to make them aware of exports, that they have an idea of the challenges. The third part is to make them export ready. The problem with small companies, Chair, and it's a very sad thing, is that often when they come to our office, it's too late. They've been hurt already. We have an obligation to ensure that our emerging companies are placed in a space that we equip them to deal with these challenges in an effective manner. Then we have a startup exporter program. This is specific training about specific sectors and specific challenges in the market. And the last is what we hope to achieve over the next 3 years is to substantially increase at least by 500 the number of what we call global exporters. That we have had done the morally right thing to equip them for the challenges that faces them abroad. Of the target markets, as far as outside Africa is concerned, these are the key markets that we are focusing on. You will note, certainly from reading that you may do, that this is not an exhaustive list of all countries. We simply do not have the resources to do everything for everybody. So these are the countries where we believe, outside Africa, there are very specific opportunities for South African exporters. In terms of policy coherency, all the sectors that we deal with, and these are the 12 priority sectors, are also the sectors in the industrial policy that the department administers through the Industrial Policy Action Plan. In terms of our global footprint, you will note that the bulk of our offices lies in Africa. An important note about Europe is that we only have currently 3 offices in Europe. The rest are manned by specialists that we recruit that knows the local market. We call them marketing officers. Asia also have a substantive share. Australia, we only have a marketing officer. We have a very slim footprint, which is worrying, in South America. And then the US, my colleague here has served there. It is such a big country that I can tell you we cannot emulate the Canadians, who are now planning to open in the next 5 years a footprint that will reach to 50 offices across. That is more than our total global footprint. We don't have those resources. So we need to put these front runners of our strategy in places where they can do the country the best value for money. We've also now reached a point where for each of the regions outside Africa, we've drawn up a value proposition that says, what is it that specific market offers to us? And then we've also defined the sector opportunities for each of those. In terms of the implementation plan, short term, this is where there's no time, is the principle of getting an export culture going. Implement and deepen the implementation of the National Exporter Development Program, export promotion and prioritized markets, and then very important, branding. Medium term is competitiveness issues, and that is where the industrial policy will have to play a very important role.
There's an old saying in exports, you cannot export what you don't make. If we are not going to substantially increase the industrialization of South Africa, as per government policy, and quickly, you will end up in a space where you're not going to break that vicious cycle of exporting raw material, nor will we be able to compete with the new kids on the block. And let me tell you, in Europe we have seen this. Every meter that they take from us takes us 2 meters to get it back again. You know, you have to work twice as hard to regain the market access that you have. We need to also seriously develop a national branding, that if you see a South African product, it's recognizable, everybody knows it, it has a quality standard attached to it. And in the long term, infrastructure, logistics and skills are the things that if we by 2030 want to double our current exports from 0.47% to 1%, might hold the key. What is the end game? We want to be the leading per capita export nation in Africa. Our domestic competitiveness must become international competitiveness. Sometimes being a prophet in your own country does not make you a prophet at all. So it is important that we build our competitiveness. The export culture I spoke at length to. The improved trade facilitation. We need strong political support. And that's where often I think our head of state, in the way that the French does it, I think there's substantive, very creative work that we can do to ensure that we emulate how other countries use their political heads to spearhead new exports. Infrastructure and trade-related costs are currently a problem that faces, especially the small companies. We need linkages between export and investment. If you find that somebody wants something, but you can't do it yourself, then we need to get an investor. And this cross-pollination between these three work streams is very important, because the work we do are tied up in one single cohesive effort, because we dare not pull apart from each other and work in silos. We need national trade promotion organizations. The provinces can be a very large part of our strategy in making sure that we're a big country. I've served in Belgium for the department, and I can tell you that Belgium is 63 square kilometers smaller than the Kruger National Park. If you work in a small country like that, life's easy. You build a road, it's 271 kilos at its longest part. If you build a road in Africa, that's a road. So it is important that we take cognizance of these issues. And then moving on to trading West Africa. I've been with the department 35 years. Many of the people working in the department have not been born when I started working there. But this is, for me, one of the most exciting new developments that has happened in a very short time. And remember when I started, we talked about the principle that successful trading nations trade with their neighbors. What is important is this free approach. Pronged approach is the principle of infrastructure development. Remember the principle, if in Africa you build a road, that's a road, not in Belgium. Industrial development, but on a continental basis. And then market integration. There's a medium-term strategic framework that has been developed, and this is how it started to come about from 24. The first was regional industrialization and integration. We need to do this because other countries in Asia, Europe, and other places, notably in South America, are doing this. Working with other African states, we need to take forward a regional industrialization agenda. You can't just have one developmental pole at the very edge of the continent. Next is trade among African countries must be further promoted. We need to trade with each other. And lastly, we have to work together with state-owned enterprises, developmental finance institutions. The private banks are very selective of how they finance. We need to understand they have to make a buck, but it's important that the developmental finance financial organizations to draw it into this, and particularly the infrastructural needs in Africa. So there was a target to create an Africa Export Council in 1617, but then there was a redefinition of the work, and the Africa Export Council was refined and rebranded as Trade Investment South Africa to ensure a holistic and sustainable approach to trade and investment on the continent. And it was launched last year on the 15th of July, 2016. I think what is important is that it is created to be a go-to unit. We all pay lip service to a lot of things, but there wasn't really a point where exporters interested in our neighborhood could realistically approach the department to go to about what are trade and investment opportunities. It is also the first time that I think my colleague has done major work in terms of working closely with governments and business in the rest of Africa. If we are not going to work together as Africans, I'm talking from a continental perspective, the rest of the world will take advantage of us. The next is to offer facilitation services to support business and utilize outward investment to the rest of Africa to drive our value-added exports. If we're not going to do this, we will probably be very sorry in 5 to 10 years, because I can tell you the competition is coming. That is India, China, the US, a lot of countries. If we as the continent are not going to get our act together, and I believe at a very deeply personal level that this is something that we can do right. And if we do it right, it could substantively change the game plan. The first principle is developmental integration. By identifying infrastructure and industrial projects in the rest of Africa, the mandate that this division received was to implement an outward investment-led trade strategy. This is important words. If we are not going to do that, it will be done by other countries who may not have very noble principles in doing that. This is probably the only way that we will also address the important trade imbalance which we have with the rest of Africa. As South Africa invests in and imports from the rest of Africa, we create future demand for South Africa's own value added. That is the virtual cycle. The next objective is to position South African entities and companies as the preferred supplier. We need to very actively pursue this, because if we are not going to be the preferred supplier, who will then be? The new kids on the block that will walk in. To uncover trade and investment opportunities for South Africa incorporated in the rest of Africa. To assist South African businesses already working in Africa. Remember, there's a substantial amount of South African companies already working on the continent. And to assist South African business with their market entry strategies. It will, in terms of offerings, it will facilitate South African businesses with the necessary services. The focus is specifically on export readiness companies, and this is where there should be this virtuous handshake, is that the graduates from our export development program should be a natural feeding ground for the division that deals with Africa. Very important is we encourage business we support to embrace the guidelines for good business practice in doing business in Africa. We need to be more virtuous than the rest of the world. Three key offerings: access to capital, access to markets and contracts, and other non-financial, and I'll briefly. The first is the access to capital. It's working with various institutions to facilitate access to capital. Most companies will tell you that is one of their single biggest stumbling blocks in doing efficient work. It will be delivered through the leveraging of South African developmental finance institutions and DTI incentives. Export insurance financing. We are in the process of establishing an Africa Export Exim Bank that should be up and running within the next year. Market exploration, promotional financial support, and then critically the infrastructure and industrial project funding. access to markets. You can have a brilliant product, but if there are specific market access barriers in the country that you want to enter, you can try until you are blue in the face. The first measure is then to undertake sector-specific and project-specific business missions to the continent. The next is unlocking trade and investment opportunities through government-to-government engagement. I hope that you will also see the golden thread that runs through this presentation, is that we all are trying to emulate to work in one single cohesive team. This is not the work that can be undertaken in a silo mentality. And then the addressing of non-tariff barriers. Other non-financial support is to assist with market research. Information is the lifeblood of exports. Establishing a portal for business networking and matchmaking. If we are not going to do it, other countries will do it. That is the harsh reality of the work that we do. The sharing of information on African markets with business through dialogue platforms. Often, even though we are sharing the same continent, we don't know each other sufficiently well. Trade in West Africa is currently operating on the basis of transferred officials from within the DTI. The current staff complement is 18 and 2 interns, and our budget is about 2 million rand. I hope to make that substantially more in the next few months. But this is hard work that lies ahead in cementing the efforts that have been done so ably in the last 18 months. The sub-programs within the division, there's an executive unit which directs the work and provides operational support. Stakeholder and knowledge management is to create and maintain strategic relations with key stakeholders, cutting-edge technology, investment opportunities, and publication of opportunities and dissemination. And lastly, the investment facilitation unit that will deal with South Africa's manufacturing, infrastructural development, investment to other African markets on the continent as part of our contribution to the increasing intra-Africa industrialization. Trade facilitation is to position us as a preferred source. Colleagues, I can't stress how important this is, because if we are not going to do what we say in this paragraph, we will probably be very disappointed in our staff. And the last is the government-to-government relations, which broadens and strengthens the bilateral economic relations with partner countries. The key deliverables in the last, and it's important as this is a new part of our business, that you just have some sense of what has been achieved in the last year. It has participated in regional workshops with the chemical cluster. It has co-hosted inward delegations from Ghana and Nigeria, and with the investment promotion agencies in partnership with GGDA in Johannesburg and Westrum. Participation in a workshop hosted by the Cross Border Road Transport Agency. Participated in the World Economic Forum Africa workshop. Participated in the CEO's Forum of the Association of African Developmental Finance Institutions. Participated in AFRICSIN conference. And in the interest of not sticking to our time, stakeholder engagements. There's a lot of meetings with companies. I'm very proud of the work the division is doing in terms of mobilizing the export councils and their members. There was meetings with various African missions based in South Africa. And then, as I said, the continued engagement with DFIs for activating the SA corporate approach to the continent. So what do we need to do? That government-to-government platforms, this is some of the things that's happening in the absolute recent past, is the South Africa-Tanzania Binational Commission, the SA-Zimbabwe, the SA-DRC, SA-Botswana, SA-Mozambique, SA-Angola, Senegal, Angola, and the Joint Trade and Investment Committee, and then the same with the Republic of Congo. There's a co-hosting of Invest in Madagascar. It's a country the size, it's an island the size of France, Germany, and Italy together, just off our coast. We do need to look at these opportunities. We participated in the Export to Africa seminar held in Swane. The World Bank was contacted. This is quite an exhaustive list. Probably just your permission. I think it's an impressive list of achievements for just a year. If one look at our global export markets, and the red one is Africa. You know, a business case in South Africa, often we tend to make very convoluted, very difficult business cases for something that's actually right there. If you look at that graph of where the red is going, that in itself should give you a clear sense of the sheer growth of the potential in Africa holds for South Africa. The problem is the trade balance. We are exporting so much more to Africa than what they are exporting to us. And this graph is something that this division has a key target to address through some of the initiatives. If you look at the top destinations in Africa, these are important shares of our global trade and investment figures. To give you a sense, the whole of the continent of South America represents less than 1.5% of our total exports. That is roughly half of what we export to just one country in Africa. So I see very promising changes in the composition of our trade. Our total trade with Australia is just under 3%. So in context, you can see how critical that component is. Chair, with your permission, I would now like to just briefly show you the video on investment.
Is hoping to up Africa's biggest and busiest seaports. national regulator for compulsory specifications. The company's an intellectual property commission.
This is the end game. We've started in Pretoria 2 years ago by having a national investment center. This is something that the department is particularly proud of, because although this is a KwaZulu-Natal focused video, it now exists for the Western Cape. The next one will be launched in Gauteng. And then, as you will see, it will be rolled out to all the provinces to ensure that each province has such a world-class facility that when an investor arrives on our shore, to be able to receive everything they need in one single central point. Because that is the single biggest investor complaint, is that you need to talk to 50 people to do two things. And in this case, you're cutting down not just on the cost of business, but it paints a picture of us as an efficient and dynamic country. Investment is a two-pronged approach. The first part is the promotion, and then often the most critical one is the facilitation of that investment into the country. Investment is a difficult game. It depends on factors such as image, brand awareness, investor perceptions. Therefore, investment agencies must ensure that their operational functions are geared towards addressing this. We can't sell an old-fashioned, conventional view of the world anymore. We also need to counter negative views. You must remember that it's about competition. And one way of getting the business is by painting your competition in a particular view or light. There are a lot of models. We've looked at Malaysia, Singapore, and Ireland, which are the best practice countries, and have used all this. So, the investment video you've seen is an outcome of the National Investment Promotion Agency and the one-stop shop, which regulates all the efforts in all the parts. It's a division in the Department of Trade and Industry, and it hopes to facilitate the increase in the quality and quantity of foreign and domestic direct investment by providing an investment recruitment, problem-solving, and information service. And those three things is the thing that investors tell you, this is what I want. The services they offer is investment information. That is the lifeblood of our business, both exports and investment, is the principle of access to information. Investment facilitation. If you look at that list, it is comprehensive. But what we've seen is that you can work so hard to bring a company to South Africa, and then we stumble over the last hurdle, which often is something small like a visa or a business permit for the company. So it is important that the facilitation work that is being done is done in such a way that it creates, as per the video, a very effective and dynamic view of us, the nation, that we can be proud of. A lot of investment comes from existing investors. So you need to do aftercare to ensure that you help them on recruitment, talent and skills, policy advocacy, investor surveys, business forums, and retention and expansion, because that is something that we have not paid sufficient attention to. There's normally an investment cycle that starts with targeting. Investment is not a shotgun approach. You need to know what is the gap before you can actually go and do it. Once you've done the targeting, you need to facilitate the entry, and once the entry is done, you need to do the aftercare. That is what the investment promotion agency does. Below is what the investor does. Let me tell you, we should not think that foreign investors don't know what's going on in this country. They are sometimes incredibly well informed. They do a lot of feasibility planning. They do screening. Short list of locations. If we are not on the top of our business, another destination, another way of dealing with investors could take a very valuable investment. They do due diligence. Remember, these are multi-billion investments sometimes. Don't think they're not going to check. And last is the final decision after all these things. And then they become operational. There are four things that an investment promotion agency should do. The first is the policy and the strategy to ensure everybody is on the same page. The second is lead generation, to clearly understand where an investment could be placed. Thirdly, an investment marketing or targeting strategy. And fourthly, the investment servicing, which is facilitation, aftercare, and retention. Committee members, retention is becoming a very important thing. The way the world operates and with the fourth industrial revolution that's looming, it's become easier and easier for companies to just pull up and to move to another part of the world. It often has very little to do with what's happening here. It is just that there's a better deal across the horizon. So retention is becoming a very important part of our business to ensure that those investors that are here stay here. That is the value chain that I've explained now. This is the policy coherency. There is a sector focus. Remember policy coherency? All that we do in all three of these work streams are based on the industrial policy of South Africa. And there are five key sectors they deal with, which is the green economy, services, manufacturing, advanced manufacturing, and the resource base. That's also best practice, by the way. And then the priority sectors, as a consequence of this, And you will see that much of it is at the higher end of the manufacturing scale. Because that's where we as a country will need to start playing. There's an inter-ministerial commission on investment committee, right? Which is led by the president. That's also best practice. We can't resolve investment issues if there is not a single coordinated government-wide intervention. And these are the nine things that the president is enforcing. Overall coordination, alignment, and policy coherence. You will see that there are certain keywords that becomes a refrain, like policy coherence. The improvement in our investment climate. The rollout of the one-stop-shop services. The overall coordination and alignment of South Africa's marketing, communication, and media. And our media is not painting a particular pretty picture. I was in a plane in Germany a week ago, and they were distributing a national newspaper from South Africa. On the front page was a robber lying dead in blood. And I was thinking to myself, because there was a well-dressed gentleman sitting there, he had this in front of him, he closed it and he folded it and he put it away. What if this is an investment? What does that say? Am I actually going to survive getting off the plane? I'm speaking about this because we are painting a particularly grim and often uncoordinated and sensationalist view of a country which offers so much, which has so much good news stories to tell, that this is one of the most critical things, that if we are not going to fix that, we will literally be in a space where our own view of the world through the news outlets are going to tell people the wrong story. The setting up of private sector investment, higher impact industrial policy action plan, we now need to start moving. The scaling up of sector investment, the identification and the packaging and implementing, this is brought to the president if there's a problem. And he then directs and instructs how to deal with it. Very important, regional integration and industrialization, that is where my colleague on my right comes in. Promoting cooperation and partnerships, and you see how we also speak the same language and export about the alignment of partners. And lastly, to coordinate the inputs into the Presidential Big Business Working Group. It was established on the 1st of April 2016. It is a defined focal point in government. It plays a critical client role with the DTI. It's one of the five client-facing divisions in the department. It plays an important role in terms of the operational functions that are based on an accumulated set of methodologies. Investment is very methodological, sorry, where school I attended. And here you need to be on top of your game. You can't rely on old and conventional ways of doing business. I've spoken about some of the services. Just want to point at bullet number three is to unblock and reduce red tape in government. That's a big complaint from investors. The one-stop shop, we have shown you the video that shows the precise way of working. Ultimately, this slide, if you perhaps need it later and just have a look, has produced an environment where you deal with the business of investment with the cooperation and coordination of all players. This is all the one-stop shop services. Then the top 40 project, which is run by the president. Colleagues, these are the 40 game changers that we hope that will also help us in exports. Because again, remember that principle, you can't sell what you don't make. So there's a particular high hope from our side as the salespeople that this factory development will lead us to to get the right products to sell on behalf of the country. There's some statistics. These are the launches. The one was launched right here in Cape Town. Here, I have 2 minutes to share. I hope I haven't been in 2 minutes to miss a critical point. I do apologize, but it is a fairly long presentation. We would be welcoming any questions from the committee. Thank you for allowing us the opportunity. We're very grateful to you and the members.
Thank you so much for the presentation. I guess it was not just a presentation, but also some kind of a workshop, especially on most of the information that is given, information that we normally get through the web. Today we have the personal information, and we are able to have the opportunity also to be asking questions. In this committee, we believe that we shouldn't just ask questions, we should also contribute so that the people we interact with also, as they go back, they also have something to take along with. We will then be indicating, as usual, some writing home so that I can see what to do. I'll start with the beginning, that is Mem Bodo, and then that is Liam.
Thank you very much. You're very welcome, Dr. Ndisi. It's quite informative. Well, I think it's very broad, isn't it? Mine, just to deal with one matter, in South Africa, we have a raw material, particularly in Mamma. But the only challenge that we're facing with is don't globalize. We don't deal with globalization. We don't deal with globalization. We take it as raw and then manufacture somewhere else. Now, our view, if we want to change the game, I think it's pretty important that we do that on our own. We start to manufacture so that we're able to be competitive than any other country.
Thanks very much, Chair, and thank you very much for your very comprehensive presentation. A little bit earlier this year, this committee did a visit to Malaysia as part of our parliamentary oversight, and I think the feedback we got there was that their trade relationship with South Africa, I think their exports to us were down, but it appeared that things weren't particularly rosy. And I was just wondering what we're doing in that part of the world as far as export promotion is concerned, because obviously those are some of the world's major growing economies, you know, in Malaysia, Thailand, Singapore, all that area. And, you know, obviously while it's important to have the focus on the neighbours and our larger trading partners, and I get the fact that China is a big trading partner of ours, what specifically are we doing in that kind of that Southeast Asia region? Thank you.
Thank you so much. One of my questions is around export villages in terms of trade hubs. Where I want to find out is if there is this trade hubs that normally people go, but when they come back, most of the time there's nothing out of it. It's like people just went there and came back. But there is no, especially the emerging SMMEs, there's no, you know, they go there and they will be told that, no, you must interact so that you can find investors. But reality is to say sometimes SMMEs don't know how to sell themselves. Now, what plan is there? Because most of the time I know that SMMEs goes for trade hubs or being, I don't know what you call it, but I want to understand, is there any plan that we are having around this? These trade hubs that we've started, and in terms of beneficiation, we are talking about manufacturing. What is it that we make sure that, especially as South Africans, we export more raw materials? What is the plan to make sure that we we manufacture from our country, and then we start to sell to other countries? And is there any plan that says, for this year, we will cut exporting maybe by 20% and concentrate on manufacturing? And then as the year goes, so that we can be a country where we want to be, where we export our own things instead of just exporting raw, and then when they come back, they are more expensive. In terms of how we sell ourselves in other countries, it's correct in terms of media. As a country, we are very negative people. We don't believe in ourselves, especially the media. When we talk, then they said, no, the people have got the right to know, not knowing that they're doing so much damage for the country. I once went to Washington, D.C., and immediately when I was at the airport, I was told that here crime is triple South Africa, but we don't hang our linens out. And really, for that 2 weeks that I stayed in, I could see that in South Africa, I'm still safe. I could see it was happening in front of me. So all I'm trying to say is, how do you tell the media? How do you have a meeting where you tell them that what they are portraying outside, whether right or wrong, affects the investment in the country? Because most of their time they are reasoning is, it's very vague to say, no, people must know. Who must know? Outside people or inside of what we know? So that's one of the things that I want to know. The other things I can see they are there. I'm asking myself, out of these whole people that are exporting, out of all people that are exporting and benefiting out of them, how many do we have which are SMMEs who really benefit out of it in terms of race, women, in terms of those categories? Who are these people who benefit out of exporting? And if not, what is the plan to make sure that the emerging exporter, especially black people, are also part of that? Is there any plan? What percentage? If it's no, what is it that you want to do? Thank you.
Thank you very much, Chairperson. Let me also appreciate the presentation by Mr. Leroux. The easy manner with which you conduct the presentation is in line with what you said in the presentation, that you've been in this environment for 35 years or so. It shows in the presentation. But what is worrying is the fact that regardless of this, you are in an active capacity. We could utilize you more on a permanent basis. Unfortunately, you are acting DDG. I think that is a little bit of a minus. The first question, Mr. Leroux, is on what is called the Global Exporter Passport Program. The one with an R, and you made a comment that you said, unfortunately, by the time some of the companies come to this global exporter, they've already lost it. They are beyond the assistance. But the question is the system not designed in such a way that all these companies, especially the smaller ones, know about this exporter, so that they are able to come here for assistance when they can still work, not when they are dead or dead? That is the first question. The second question has already been asked to you, but I'm going to ask it differently. We know that South Africa is going to need incentives for companies for attracting foreign direct investment. there are incentives. The question is, are there incentives for local companies to encourage them to process raw materials in the country? Incentives. The third question, Mr. Leroux, is around the many subdivisions, divisions and subdivisions within the GTR. Earlier on in the presentation, you spoke about the importance of having what you can call seamless interactions, seamless activities. You said we need to move away from the silo mentality. But as you proceed with the presentation, you introduce more and more and more divisions and subdivisions. This one is doing this, this one is doing that. The question is, in that situation, how do you ensure that there is integration? How do you ensure that the left hand knows what the right hand is doing? And what is the relationship? Is the relationship cordial? Is the relationship alive between the DTI and the rest of other parties? And the last question Mr. Leroux, it may appear not to be directly linked to the presentation, but it is in a way, because you said while there is this importance around ensuring that we acquire foreign direct investment, we should also encourage local investment. People should not put money in their banks, and so they should invest in foreign, but it's also local. Now, I want to ask this question. We have the CIDB in South Africa. Many people don't really understand how it works. The CEDF and government institution where you must go and renew this paper every year and so on. Can you perhaps explain to us just how useful it is, the construction industry development board? How does it really add value? The situation of local construction companies. Thank you very much.
Thanks, and I think any other question? Thank you, Chair, and thank you very much for the presentation. I was out. I'm not sure if this question was asked. If it was, in it has to forgive me. But the brief one, the definition of investment, what does it mean? How does it involve the SME who partners with foreign companies? And whether they are partnering in exporting or importing, what is promotion investment and how does it stand together? If it was asked, you'll forgive me.
Thanks, Nana. Okay, that's all. Okay. Thank you so much, Mr. Leroux and the team, for really bringing together the document. It will continue to be a value to us. I just want to agree with some of my colleagues' comments around the way you have presented this. My major concern is that I'm not too sure as a country whether we really focus inland or we focus in the area around the coast. Because sometimes, yes, for now we're talking ocean economy and everybody's excited about that. And Operation Pakisa, but while you're talking Operation Pakisa, you hear there's something around the economic development zone. You know, there's too much business. And as a result, this is where I am. I get confused as what exactly is our focus. If I were to go out and a person asked me, what's South Africa's focus, economic focus, or economic development focus area at the moment, what would I say? question is whether are we not, you know, trying to be everywhere at the same time, and then in the same vein, really wasting the meager resources that we have in terms of skills. We know we don't have the skill to be everywhere. We cannot afford to be everywhere with the type of skill we have currently, quantity-wise. Which brings me also to the issue, I think it was raised by Dr. Kliani, of having too many, you know, structures. We seem to be duplicating, you know, the work a lot. One would ask, for instance, on this Africa, the region of Africa kind of work structure that we do. We have foreign missions there. What's the role of those foreign missions? Can they perhaps be kept busy by doing some of this work? Isn't it time now that we integrate our work in such a way that when we go to ask the person on the left and the person on the right, is able to tell you the same story? You know, the example is when you go to Cuba, first person you meet is a youth. You know that government is very clever. They will give you the youth. They'll welcome you. But the way they welcome you, they also tell you about their country. Who are we? What do we stand for? You know, what do we want as a country? What are our values? What's the value system? You know, in the country, not just of you, but of the country as a whole. You know, and then the next thing you go and meet a women's organization there, they'll be telling you the same story. You'll go and meet somebody there as an employee, government employee, will be telling you the same story. There's that oneness in terms of the narration of the country's message. But when it comes to us, you go to America also, you'll be hearing more or less the same, albeit what's happening currently. But that's the fact of the matter. With us, whether it's economic message, whether any other message, we seem to be everywhere. I appreciate a lot on the one-stop service that we're talking about. It begins to show us, you know, collaborating and integrating our efforts. But I'm not sure whether in so doing, here in South Africa, we're also doing it in our foreign mission. Is that what we are doing? South Africa is known to be very good in planning, you know, developing nice documents, policy-wise, but when you look at the policies sometimes of different departments, you wonder if there was somewhere where they really meet. I know you talked about the asylum and family issue having to do away with it, but I'm not sure whether with the new approach we are also addressing that particular thing. So my worry is around the wastage. We don't have much, but we continue to work in while we're coming up with new solutions, but in terms of practice, we're still applying the old, you know, ways of doing things. And I'm saying we'll continue to suffer because you can't use an old mop to clean and expect to get a cleaner surface. Because obviously the mop is old, it will leave some, you know, remnants and so forth. So that's my take in the whole thing. not meant to discourage, nor should it be taken as though, you know, I'm not appreciating what the efforts that are being done currently. I'm just, you know, my problem is that I'm looking, beyond what I'm being presented with, and I still can see, maybe one having been in this for quite some time also, I feel there's something that is that I need us to be really looking at. I have one last issue that I wanted to talk to. Okay. I'm looking at the slide that was talking to the countries that we are exporting to or trading with. I know that you said the three top ones, the five top ones include two in Africa, which is Botswana and Namibia. But then looking at Botswana and Namibia as countries now with potential in terms of resource base, I tend to be a bit worried that really going forward, is there much that you're going to be getting from those countries? And perhaps one would hasten to ask a question as to monetary-wise, what are we talking about here? The 17.3%. I mean, if I look at Botswana, I'm not sure what you're talking about. And then 16.4%. And then I would want us to compare that with the DRC of 4.5%, Angola 3.8%, Nigeria 3.5%. To me, these are big economies in Africa. That's far. I know that Tanzania, Kenya, them are not here. But I just want to understand the thinking behind this. And is this led by our relations with those countries? Or is it a deliberate decision to cooperate with this very same countries where we really seem to be prioritizing, because you said investment also involves prioritization. I just want to understand, because this policy formulation, policy implementation, and forward looking, if we really are serious about this in Africa, what exactly are we doing? I know, well, in terms of Angola, yes, the closeness, there was that close, inward looking kind of a thing. Is it the same with Nigeria? Is it the same with DRC? I don't know. Now Angola is open. That's why from 1st of December we'll be having no visas. I think that was the only country in Africa where we had visas. Now that they are opening with the advent of the new president, are we going to see ourselves now also increasing? Because when the president was here last week, he spoke to some of these issues that we need to cooperate even further in terms of trade and other areas. So when DTI plans, do we take into consideration such things? I know that DTI has been to Angola, for instance, various exports, you know. And what are the, I think it's Mam Mfulo who asked that question also. What are the benefits of such trade exports? Do we see anything after those visits or after we expose, you know, what we have in the country? Or is it still somebody who does the work afterwards, and what is the impact of that work? I'm trying to check also the value for money. all return on investment, especially in terms of the effort that is put into that. I'll end there. I know I can talk forever when it comes to some of these issues, but I'll just end there. Thanks.
Thank you very much, Chair and honourable members, and thank you for the opportunity to have us. My name is Lerato Matabofe. I'm also the acting DDG of Trade Invest Africa in the DTR. I haven't been with DTR as long as Mr. Nerundo. I've been there 16 years, so I'm going to have catching up to do this very well. But we really appreciate the opportunity, honourable members. I think pertinent issues have been raised that I'd like to touch on, specifically around localization beneficiation, around what our economic development focus is as a department broadly, and sort of the new way of doing things with respect to Africa. My responsibility is the African continent, so I'll respond in that regard and allow the family to take honorable members to other aspects that have been raised. I think one of the key things, honorable members, that we need to realize is that we have a priority to build a manufacturing and industrialized economy that exports value-added products. And if you look at our trade with the world, the bulk of our value-added exports go to the rest of Africa, not anywhere else. There is some that goes to the U.S., for example, but the core of our value-added export basket is the rest of the continent. So that then says to us that our own continent is not a market that we can ignore. We need to have a dedicated, specialized focus to grow our exports to the rest of the continent and to make sure that our strategy is a sustainable strategy. Because again, honorable members, part of the assessment that we made, we realized that politically we're also getting a lot of pushback from the rest of the continent in terms of South Africa just merely exporting to the continent. So the question has always been, how do we ensure a two-way symbiotic win-win approach? And how do we then use investments, investing in the rest of the continent to also drive our exports? Because that's the future of trade with the continent. We can't just be seen as a partner to be sending products to the market without necessarily investing in those markets. So it's for that reason that the mandate we've been given is to pursue an outward investment-led trade approach. Because we know that where South African invests, where South African companies invest, they source inputs from South Africa. If they're going to invest in a manufacturing plant somewhere in Tanzania, for example, we know that the machinery that they're going to use will come from South Africa. We know that whatever ancillary goods that will be required around that investment come from South Africa. That has been the model. So that's the model that we're pursuing. So that is not just to repeat, because that really is a big one. We're already getting some pushback on it. It's not just about directly exporting from South Africa and not being invested and present in those economies and creating jobs. So that's our strategy for the rest of the continent, honorable members. We are taking actual investors to the continent. Honorable Chair mentioned that Angola as an example. We've just hosted a business forum 2 days of Friday. As well, and a lot of opportunities have come up in terms of investment. So our approach would be to take South African companies to Angola to invest in the infrastructure build of that country, because that's where the priority is. Understanding that's how we're going to stimulate growth there and stimulate demand for South African exports. So it becomes that cycle that Mr. Neville mentioned a bit earlier. And I think it's important as well to underscore why the African continent is critical for us. We always mention our concern, and rightfully so, about South Africa just exporting raw materials, particularly to Asia, particularly to China. There's a reason for that, because China has a specific policy that says the country will not import finished goods. It's a stance, it's a policy of the country. The country will not import finished goods unless there are really special circumstances. it's a position that the country has taken. That's why I think a couple of years ago we had to negotiate a special carve-out for value-added products. So on the value-added product list, then we had to negotiate with the Chinese in South Africa to gain access. So that's a critical element to understand, Honourable Member, because it has implications for the strategies that we employ when we say we need to export more value-added products to country X or country Y. There are a lot of barriers to that. So where we've seen a lot of success with respect to value-added products is the African continent. So the question becomes, what do we do to bolster efforts around growth on the continent? It is our continent, after all. And the opportunities go beyond just export, as mentioned. There's huge opportunities around investment as well, the infrastructure build on the continent. How do we position our companies there? That's why SMEs can benefit the most, actually, because most SMEs are at the level of services. There are a lot of black professionals, young professionals that are engineers that can supply services to the continent around infrastructure contracts and the like. It's not just about a product. So we need to change the internationalization. We need to internationalize our companies a bit more, both large and small. So that's Honourable Members, is where we're coming from, because we're trying to avoid using an old mob, as Honourable Chair mentioned. We're trying to then refocus and come up with new ways of doing things and improvements. It may seem like additional bureaucracy, but the department realized that if we're going to attract investment in the country, we need a dedicated unit, hence invested there. If we're going to ramp up efforts on our continent as our future growth pole, we need a dedicated area that deals with the African continent. And if we're going to expand and maintain and sustain what we have as well as the rest of the world, which is what Mr. Mulerud does, we also need to be dedicated in that effort. The question becomes, if all three are conflated into one, will we achieve the impact that we expect? I suppose that's yet to be seen, because we are now implementing new models and new ways of doing things. So I'd like to request Honourable Members at least to give us some time before we do an evaluation and assessment exercise as to whether this is impactful or not. Because we deem it important, we'll come back and report on progress in each area to justify the creation of these new areas. But we believe this is the future of South Africa. If we don't create new markets, if we don't focus on the rest of the continent, if we don't mobilize investment, particularly around industrialization in South Africa, we don't open new markets, we're not going to transform this economy. And that's the starting point, and those are our marching orders.
The question, I think, also was, you can take your chicken. I'm old school,
I have to ask. I don't think you want to see
it. It's getting heated, I understand. And I could see that some numbers are beginning to shift them, you know? Make movements on their chairs. But it's fine. We will be asking follow-up questions, but I normally say we ask there and then so that we don't have to forget. We don't have to forget whenever we... unless you write it down and then ask at the end. You might not have time, enough time also to make those follow-up. On this Africa integration issue, Mem Fodo?
Chair, I'm just a little bit puzzled, now baffled, I'm not so sure what the English word is. What do I make it? That people can say, this is our rule. You don't bring this, and yet Tina, are you saying in South Africa we don't have people that we can train to make us to beneficiate? If people, it's tit for tat. If I give you something, you must give. But if you say to me, you are closing the door, our law says, like you're saying, the Chinese say, they don't buy things that are already given.
then, you know. Now, why do we go to them? That's my question. Why do we go to them? Why do we encourage to go to them? What if their doors are closed? What are they bringing? You know, I don't want to elaborate long, but that's all my question.
It's a very fair question. I also have the same. I mean, I don't understand. You dictate terms and I still knock on your door.
Exactly.
When I have various avenues, when I have other doors I can knock at and then I can be welcomed without any problem. Why are we insisting on that particular door at our own expense? I mean, you can see we hate him, but then, you know, instead of protecting us, you want to put us through to that closed door. First open the door, not in your own terms, but rather in their terms. What does that mean?
It might be a political question, but the question is, don't shy away from saying that.
No, we will not, honourable members. I think it's a critical question, but we're also cognizant of the fact that China is also a very critical partner in terms of FDI into our economy. So it's a quid pro quo, because where we may have market access challenges in terms of exporting to the country, there's also a benefit from them in terms of their investments in the South African economy, particularly in those sectors actually around beneficiation. This is where we get to dictate terms. Because the number of investments that have come from China have been directed towards industrial sectors in South Africa. So there's that balance in the relationship. And then of course politically we belong to BRICS, we have to respect those multinational institutions, the way they are led at the level of our presidents as well. So there are many dynamics in the relationship. So we are cognizant of the challenges, but we also don't want to lose some of the benefits that are accrue to their engagement. But I think, Rian, you've got better experience with the Chinese, so let me leave it to you.
Chair, I'll also try in my response to deal with some of the other things, so I'll try and group them together.
That's when you deal with the Chinese. We have other sectors, for instance, when we do our oversight work, very critical sectors to our economy that normally complain of Chinese products. The very same products that you seem to be talking to, they are complaining that they are really disadvantaging them.
Mm.
So they are exports, or what we imported from them, is making our own people uncomfortable. Our exports are making us uncomfortable. So where should we be? I mean, is it not that time where we have to, because as technocrats, you obviously are listened to when it comes to some of the things. Because we have ITEC that comes with issues here of dumping, of what are, that are coming from that, you know? So what do we do? How do we protect our own industry? Because we can't be having people crying left, right, and center. And here we come and say our policy priority are still going to go forward irrespective of. That's where we get puzzled. Celero.
Thank you, Chair. I actually need a day or two to respond to this question. I will try to be brief. I think the old Montpellier problem and honourable members, you must also understand that we value these interactions because we learn. The learning organization is somebody that at least can come to solutions. So your interventions are greatly appreciated. If I just want to start with the old MOC principle, there are only 9 divisions in the department. If you compare it with similar departments of similar size, there are markedly more work streams. And I think what is important is that for the first time I see light
in that there is all the different departments through which is the corporate services part of the department. There are two key policy divisions, which is industrial development and the SEZs and economic transformation. Now, if you want to look at our department like a factory, that is the factory part where the manufacturing is stimulated. Then there are the industrial, the assistance schemes, which is our banker, which bankrolls the principal of selling, which is the IDAD division. And then there's the regulatory side of it, which is the consumer control. Then we have lawyers, which is the people that negotiate, which is called the International Trade and Economic Development. And lastly, you have the client-facing three parts of our operation, which is trade and investment South Africa, trade and investment South Africa. How we structured our staff is the trade and investment Africa is also the administrative platform to launch much of the work that is done. The intellectual prowess and the thought leadership for each of these divisions then is led by those two people, but we provide them with funding and we provide them with the management of the foreign offices which I will also speak to. So, Chair, yes, we are brilliant policy writers, but the test in this pudding, the proof of that will be whether the teams that is now trying to make this value chain work are actually going to bring this to concrete projects that actually bring material and betterment of all people. Because the problem is that we write documents like this, and I've seen the sad part of where these documents then gather dust in people's offices and they have no understanding. So you must please help us, and I can give you my absolute word that there is a devotion in this young team that is starting to emerge on how to sell and release instruments into the market and to establish them as working instruments that I find extremely gratifying. If we start with the factory side, which is where the beneficiation resides, this is regulated by the Industrial Policy Action Plan. In fact, that is being represented to our committee today for the current iteration of the 18-19 Industrial Policy Action Plan. There is a great fear, not just in South Africa, about the macro economies. We need to be very honest with each other this morning. If you are not afraid of China, and someone has made the analogy, it's like an elephant in the bush. Hear it walking and you can hear it coming, and it's a big animal. You need to be prepared. We have hopes that the Industrial Policy Action Plan will at least put some fundamental building blocks about what is called the binding constraints in our economy. Some of the monopolistic behavior that you see. How do you deal with the emerging side of our economy? And here I would like to lift up the Black Industrialist program that we've launched. If you look at black economic empowerment like a triangle, this is the strongest engineering structure in the world, it's a triangle. Broad-based means that the broader the triangle, the stronger it is. If you don't have broad-based economic transformation, your triangle becomes unstable. If we are not going to grow this economy for the benefit of all, you're going to have this upright little pillar that is swaying in the winds of the global economy. So, a key issue about transformation of the economy is that you bring the broader manufacturing base of South Africa to it. It can no longer be this little, it looks like the Eiffel Tower. You need a strong, broad triangle that stands on a broad base. And we should tell. This is the message we should tell.
Not that one.
Because you can just think that if you don't have a broad-based approach,
it becomes this little thing like the Eiffel Tower that does this. I'm talking about scientific principles. And this is what we should tell people. We should not let emotion, and to a certain degree, I'm also talking about our press at the moment. The message we need to tell is that this is a broad-based country, based on a broad-based approach, not just industrialization. It goes right to the sales angle where Ms. Matawoka and myself sit. In that value chain of the DTI, we need to grow the base. The same with our exporters. Big exporters eat small exporters. It's just a way of life. In the East Rand, there is the biggest single conglomeration of small black engineering companies in the country. It's easier for a big company to go and buy that small company than to compete with them. It's sad, but if somebody, if I'm 28, I'm brilliant, and somebody gives me 35 million rand, what do you do? But this is what we need to do to achieve this broad-based approach. There isn't time. 2030 is 12 years from now. This is why the impression and plea that we're making with you is that if we're not going to do a number of radical issues with regards to the whole principle of beneficiation, the principle of having an understanding of what market access is about. One of the key problems when you select the global picture of your trade partners, Chairperson, we learned a valuable lesson in 2008 when the global economic crisis struck us, in that we had too many eggs in one part of the basket. We get hurt. So part of this picture that needs to unfold is that from this more industrialized base from which we hope to build more exports, you also look carefully how do you position all your exports locally, that if these events happen, that you are not terminally struck down. Because at that stage, Chairperson, almost 40% of our trade was with Europe, and almost 15% was with the US. So one of the key principles of radically change the way we're thinking about export is the principle of diversification. That means that the colleagues in trade in West Africa, in their specialist way, also need to have a sense that there's also a point beyond which you should not build exports into Africa. Because all your eggs in one basket is also a dangerous disease. There's no exact science for this, but what worries us is imbalances of trade. For instance, I said that less than 1% of our trade is with the 21 countries in South America. Just doesn't make sense. There's a big partner in South America. So the principle of beneficiation should be guided by the Industrial Policy Action Plan. It should then be informed by greater market access. An impassionate plea from us, Chairperson, this morning is if you have too many generalists, you end up by doing general things. My hope is that this more specialized approach in dealing with Africa as our neighborhood, remember, successful countries sell to their neighbors. Dealing with the rest of the world and then investment as a specialist function. The honorable member raised the issue of Malaysia. I will deal with that. I presume that it will be coming there, Chairperson. I just want to briefly talk about an important issue that was raised about the return on investment. Our target for exports that the department directly facilitated last year in 2016-17 was 3.75 billion. The principle of that is that we can then prove that if we had not facilitated a particular event or an occasion or a project, that sales might not have taken place. We achieved that with a budget of for pavilions and for missions of 115 million. So by spending 115 million, we got export sales of 3.75 billion. We are
at Brazil.
That's globally. We participated in 24 national pavilions, and we have 39 missions. So the principle of value for money is something that I think is very tangible. If you spend 115 million, but you've gained 375 billion. So that is a part of our business where the return on investment, and about 90% of that is in national pavilions. That is probably the most successful instrument that we are administering. I'm very proud to tell you also, Chairperson, that for the first time this year, all these divisions, the old MOC principle, have sat together and come up with a customized list of exhibitions we will take part with that fits the profile of the destination that we serve. Instead of someone in one place, they can argue precision to say, like throwing a dart in a board, this is the 20 countries that we will deal with. In terms of the Global Export of Transport Program, we have 181 current graduates. We will incorporate them in our plans for 18-19, because one of the things is you can't teach somebody something and then not make use of that knowledge in a very proactive and active way. So these graduates are an important part of next year's pavilion's attendees. What we also found is that small companies learn a lot from big companies. How do you do business? So instead of just letting these people on their own, we try to also create a mentorship environment where the smaller emerging companies can actually watch the big companies doing the business and learn. And there's a surprising openness to this, Chair. I'm very pleased to tell you that bigger companies are opening their doors to say, let me share how you write a contract with me. Let me share how you deal with an agency in this country. That learning by association is, I think, something important that we can test next year and which we have hoped to give feedback to you. There was a particular question about the profile of financial assistance. You will see that on this slide here, it is 575, and it's part of the ancillary slides in your pack, is that the single biggest percentage is agro-processing, which is also the highest in terms of employment. A growing one is aerospace, rail and marine. It was almost nothing 2 years ago. If I look at the provincial profile, this is where some of my hair loss comes from, Chairperson. We are desperately fighting to ensure that some of the smaller developmental provinces get a fair share of this bite. Hard work is being done by our Deputy Minister, who has spearheaded some of our projects in particularly the Free State, shortly in Limpopo and in Mpumalanga. We cannot continue with a situation where the three big economically driven provinces get the lion's share of this. We need to be honest with you that this is one of the things that worries me greatly and that we hope to change next year. In terms of ownership profile, in terms of historically disadvantaged individuals, black people 12%, SMEs 54%, only 11% for historically disadvantaged investment individuals, and 11%, and the other 23 are the other size companies, which is the slightly bigger. So there's encouraging improvement, particularly females, because this is some of the things that we have to work so very hard at, is to get more females, and you can see some of the figures does look better. This is all the countries, again, there's a problem that 13% of the applications is in just a few, 13 countries represent 80% of the allocation. This graph needs to look dramatically better when we meet with you next. The SSAS is the Sector Specific Assistance Scheme. This is particularly focused on emerging companies. that picture must also look different.
What SSA again?
It stands for Sector Specific Assistance Scheme.
Okay.
It is particularly focused on emerging black companies. So, for the question that was asked on return on investment and the general distribution of funds, the additional slides from after the thank you will give you as a committee a very clear sense of what we, how we spend the money that is allocated to us. We have, if you include the individual side of our business, we have a budget of 221 million for 18-19, of which we believe that 135 million would be allocated for the use of the promotion of exports and investments specifically. In terms of the issue around Malaysia, we work very closely with the Malaysians. In fact, they are one of our mentor countries. We work very closely with Matrade, which is the equivalent of the PISA division in Malaysia. And I just want to get this slide. I'm sorry, I have the other slide. That is one of the key emerging markets that we're looking at. And to answer your question, the way we're focusing, Indonesia has the biggest Muslim population in the world. By how much halal food are we exporting? We're one of the very few countries in the world. Are we being creative enough to think that why don't we service that market? Look at this Western province where we now sit. Some of the best halal factories in the world is within 20 kilometers of this building. We look at Malaysia very, very seriously. Just also from an investment perspective, let me just say that Malaysia is one of the key investments. The Philippines, we're very serious about. Singapore is a major trade hub for South Africa. There's very little that moves in this region that doesn't dock at Singapore. And then Thailand and Vietnam. We've honest with you, Vietnam scares us a bit. Very aggressive, very innovative. Lots to learn from them. Also a country with a terrible history, who have performed way beyond expectations in terms of just the short history they have since 1975. So they are competitors, but there are a lot of things we can do with them and to export to them. They're not a consumer of raw materials. And that has to be said for the other countries as well. In terms of the CIDD, I must... This is purely an export view. This is an export view. In terms of the CIDD, Jefferson, I honestly do not know. It's not part of my knowledge. I'm sorry if I fail you by not responding, but I do not know the answer to that question.
I think it's something that we need to look at. That it is central to investment and export. Especially for investors. If Chinese are involved in the construction sector in South Africa, then we need, and also in Africa, we need to understand the value of
saving. Chair, just allow me to point. If we want to survive the next decade, because Dimitri is going to be probably one of the most competitive economic decades that is going to shape this millennium, the first thing that you need to understand, and this brings us also, Chair, to your point about how we make the maximum use of foreign missions.
We don't have the footprint that Berkel has. Berkel has 115 missions globally. What we've done is we've signed an MOU with them that in countries where we can't afford to put a PPI specialist, that they would manage that process for us on the ground. We will supply the business plan, the strategic plan, and we will contribute to the operational cost. But the oversight is being done. So I am happy to report to you that there are important narrowing of how we use our resources abroad, because you cannot have two different teams playing in the same space. That is not a useful role. In Africa, we currently have 12 offices, and all of them are based on the principle of the South African serving area.
12 offices.
14. In terms of the budget allocated to us, which is 136 million rand, we can afford 27 DPI officials, 74 locally recruited personnel, covering 44 countries. That is why our alliance with Berkel is becoming ever more important, to ensure that we ride on a vehicle that they have created. We cannot work in an environment where Berkel does not supply the infrastructure. There are countries that can afford to do that, but I can tell you that the Australians have paid $12 million to have an office on the Champs-Élysées in Paris. We are not in that league. We need to understand developmentally where we are. We have 136 million. That is the constraint on the fiscus. These are currently countries, and we are going through a very rigid process in the next 3 months to ensure that whatever we have here actually speaks to the point of the globe where we can have the best penetration potential. In terms of the image of South Africa, it almost speaks to the principle of export culture. You know what, I will never understand, Chairperson, the Prime Minister of Italy was arrested while he was with two teenage prostitutes in a hot tub. It was not in the newspapers. We have this, and maybe it's a concept of where we are in our life, that everything must be on the front page. I'll be frank with you, and this is my personal opinion, and I assume responsibility for that. But I don't think we're proud enough of these South Africans. This country, and the love we have, it should be an all-consuming thing. If we have a problem, she and I will fight in front of you. But what we're doing currently in our press, if you look at News 24 and the damage it is doing abroad, remember what I told you about my experience in Germany. Somewhere, and this is not part of our mandate, so I'm speaking from my heart here, as a nation, as we perhaps grow into becoming the democratic beacon that we want to be in the world, we will really have to look at the way our press operates. Maybe it's because we like a bit gossip. People actually read these things. Maybe we should look in the mirror and say, I like gossip, I don't like it. But the way that we are projecting ourselves, despite the efforts of like Brand South Africa and all these institutions, maybe charity begins at home about how we project our country. I can tell you that it has a marked influence on how we deal abroad with investors. If you really read this morning's newspapers, Chairperson, and you are a Japanese or German businessman, it's quite scary what's on the front page of our newspapers. And again, I do not say that you do not have the right to speak your mind, because that is a democracy. But the way that it comes out is one of the single biggest inhibitors of us selling this great nation in the way that it should be. Because all the elements are here.
I would lastly just like to comment on the principle of acting here at FEMA. We do what the department expects of us, and we do the best we can. So it's a decision that's made by my principals, and I abide by that.
Thank you so much, also for being open with us. I guess we still have a long way to go yet in South Africa, and in the way we're doing things, I still believe we could do things better. Also, in trying to portray a very steadfast and being trying to be true to ourselves, because I believe we it's like we're trying to satisfy everybody at our own expense. Until I'm convinced otherwise, this is my feeling, and this is part of our hindrance to growth and development. Yes, like you said, charity begins at home. We have to take care of South Africa. We have to ensure that we impart as much knowledge as possible, and in so doing, also encourage them as much as possible. We do a lot of community work, a lot of outreach work, and there's a lot of empathy, not created out of, you know, things that are done elsewhere, but out of what we're doing to them. A young, promising, out-of-school youth wants nothing but to be an entrepreneur. Knock at each and every door, because normally they would be advised, the first door to knock at would be at CEDA. That's where you taught about, you know, business and all that. I mean, the basics of business. And then, okay, now you satisfy the needs of CEDA. You go to CIFA for financing. But I'm telling you, it takes years for that particular young person, whom, for instance, who might be very ambitious at that time, but you know, with time they lose interest and they lose hope because of the treatment that they get. So it is very important that as much as we say we have these big dreams and big ambitions, we also make sure that in that broad pyramid trying to create, we take care of the youth, which to me are the foundation, of whatever that we're trying to build. If we don't invest a lot of effort, a lot of money in them, we'll have a chance, because we are a youthful nation. That's unfortunate. I believe that before you tackle the bigger picture, you have to deal with the smaller one, because being brought together, they also can create a bigger picture on their own. And they might also help in preventing future split. I don't know, I have a military background, so I normally do this. Whenever you hit something, there are those little, you know, things that, you know, fly away from, you know, after the damage. So that's the problem that we have. If we don't take care of those little things, bring them together, because, you know, Japanese, they believe in saying, the best thing you can mold is after that thing has cracked. Because out of it, for instance, if they break a glass, they use a gold, sometimes gold or silver, thing to manage that. And then when you look at it afterwards, you think it's art. And you know, it's not art, it's what they try to do in bringing that broken thing together. So if we don't do that in South Africa, in whatever way we approach things, we will have a challenge. Because we like taking care of bigger things when we have these little things that we need to be taken care of. And to me, those little things are the very same, are the future. They have a potential to crack into something, and if they are not managed, we might see something in the future. I really, really, and I also think that I'm saying this representing this collective, feel that the work that you are doing is quite valuable, because as you talk, I sense pride, I sense commitment, I sense dedication, I sense everything that the nation needs to move forward. The challenge that I'm looking at now, or I'm sensing also, is that which you have is not replicated as fast as we can. And unless we do that, also we'll have a challenge. So there are so many things that are done well with good intention. A lot of effort put in there, a lot of time also put in there. And not wanting to sound very pessimistic, those efforts end up not being seen because of very little things that are still there on the side. So that's the message I wanted to leave with you, but also say thank you very much, and we want to appreciate the work that you're doing. Continue doing that work, and I will wish that you don't retire before you make that model work. Because if that can be replicated elsewhere, especially in the provinces that are inland, I see the future for that country. So thank you very much, and thank you for believing in your country. Your way, the Lord will vibrate. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Chair. We're very humble.
Colleagues, thank you so much too. Today marks the end of our meetings for the year. This is the last meeting we are having for the year. And I just thought I should just remind ourselves where we come from. You see, you can be excused if you want to. And thank God really for the fact that we started as this community.